Gardeners, hi there, Mai, and welcome to Garden Planet with Selena and
Karen. Kia ora.
Karen, today we are going to explore the world of Hügel Kultur. Did I say it right?
I wonder if any of the listeners are thinking it's like haute couture, like we're going to be talking like fancy dresses and stuff.
Oh, no.
I believe that's a Germanic word.
No, it's French.
Oh, it's a French. Oh, my gosh. No. So this word, Hügel Kultur, is German?
Yes.
I believe. Yeah. Okay. Right. It's not haute couture.
No,
just
it's not haute couture.
Know.
No. And then I will share with you the plant of the week. I'm not going to tell you what it is.
Oh, not even a clue?
No.
All right, then.
It's a secret until, yeah.
Okay, fine.
They surprise us.
Have it your way, yeah. Then. Okay, so let's get on with the show. So Hügel Kultur, okay, it's spelled H-U-G-E-L K-U-L-T-U-R. Okay,
yep.
That's pronounced Hügel Kultur. So Hügel means hill, and
yes.
Kultur means a culture or a mound.
Hill culture.
Yeah.
In other words.
Mm.
Why are we talking about hill culture?
Literally speaking, that's what it is. And it is. It's basically what you're looking at,
yes,
is a mound.
Ah. So
and it's a type of no-dig bed that was, I assume, designed by a German. Yeah.
So
maybe I should have that information.
Flat,
but anyway.
Flat Earth people. This is not your show.
Good point. So,
yeah, tell us about it. I mean, yeah, where
okay.
All is.
All right, then. So Hügel Kultur are no-dig raised beds with a difference. They are designed as a means of holding moisture, building fertility, maximising surface volume, and are great spaces for growing fruit, vegetables and herbs.
Great.
It's really easy, apparently.
Okay.
I would like to give this a go. In fact, if you're listening, Jackie, that's our community garden coordinator.
Yes.
And usually when I say that, she's like, no, I'm not listening, Karen. I would like to give this a go. Because
in our community garden.
Yeah, because there's the space there and the wood.
Mm. Well, our garden's quite flat, so it could do with a bit of, you know, interest.
And if Mark disappears back down to the South Island again like he did last year, but he's come back for a while, we're not going to have anyone to keep reinforcing our beds with the timber because
he's the
keen carpenter.
Ah.
And these, you don't need to build anything. You just build them up with stuff. And I'll talk to you about that. It's really easy.
Mm-hmm.
You simply mound logs, branches, leaves, grass clippings, straw, cardboard, paper, manure, compost, or whatever other biomass you have available, top with soil, and then you just plant your veggies. That's a simplistic version of it. There is a more, I'm going to go through the more. But yeah, it's that's just what it is.
Is it an optimum size that you need to have it?
You can have small or large depending on your space available.
Okay.
So if you're living in a tight urban spot, you just make a little one.
Yeah.
Like you could make one the size of rectangle, like hay bale, if you want.
Okay.
So why would you do this, you ask?
Why would you
do
this?
Well, I kind of gave you guys the answer right at the start, actually. Holding moisture, building fertility.
Oh, right.
You were not listening, Selena Chan. Oh. Shame on you. You need to go back to school.
I am at school.
I've just come from school. So apart from, of course, why would you do this? Apart from, of course, it's obvious in that it's a super fun word to say.
Yes.
Been saying it all week.
Hügel Kultur.
From that, what I can gather, it's mostly to do, though, with the wood component of the mound.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
As the wood rots, it has an incredible capacity for holding water and air. So this is a must in fact, all these things, your compost, like degradable, you sort of work your way up to at least, so the soil is something that's, well, you presume it's good quality soil on the top. So that's fully degraded, decomposed, ready to go stuff. So it starts from the biggest and then kind of works its way up.
I see. It's sort of like replicates how nature
works. As the wood rots, it has an incredible capacity for holding water and air. It creates a nifty little biome that contains a healthy soil web of microbes, fungi and insects. In time, the decaying matter provides nutrients to the microorganisms and bugs as well as the plants. And as the wood decays, it helps to prevent the soil from becoming compacted.
I think that's quite important.
Yeah, I had to sort of read that a few times, what it meant by becoming compacted.
Well, you want some air spaces for the microbes to move around in.
And there's another bit further on where I talk about it compacting. But I can, while we're on it, I'll just bring it in now. You know, the ideal shape for it is to be steep and like smaller at the top. And then like a pyramid almost shape. And then work your way down, it gets wider.
I would think these little hugelkatoa beds were long hills.
I'm going to show you a picture.
Like a little mountain range. Yeah. But not pyramid like a square, but long.
But a long, pyramid. This is where I should know this geometry.
What do you call it?
That one. A long even go there. I don't know.
Rhombus.
A Toblerone?
Oh, yeah.
How
about that? Good picture.
Yeah. So, and that's also to do with compacting and also stability. Yeah. You don't want the whole thing falling over on you. And also you have less weight. So as it gets, the weight sort of gets less and less because it's more pointy at the top. You're not going to have a heavy base that's just like really compacted.
The
weight's decreasing. That was something I read and I was like, what do they mean? I had to...
That's why
sometimes when people say things... or write things, it's like, what are they meaning by that? I had to look into it. So some experts say that these results with all the microbes and the wood and the air pockets and the moisture retention and the nutrient, everything can positively impact the bed for 15 to 20 years. So we're talking...
That's lasts longer than the wood on our beds at the community garden.
Yeah.
Like, they rot away so quick that we have to keep replacing them.
But, I mean, I think there is, if you had them in the ground...
They're on the outside of the soil.
Because it's like, you know, when you find, like, you know, that cowrie swamps where you find it preserved.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe it not being so exposed to the air, because this is one thing I remember from chemistry. oxygen... Oxidation, and biochemistry, when I studied biochemistry all those years back, oxygen plays a key role in so many things that we see anyway.
Yeah.
That are, from like caramelizing of food to, you know, there's certain compost, you've got anaerobic composting, which is not oxygen, and that's supposedly not the good one, where there's methane released.
Yeah.
And then you've got the aerobic one, which I think is what we aim for. We do aim for that. So why do. That's why you're encouraged to keep like turning it and all that.
Yeah.
So where was I going with that? Oh yeah. So you'll understand more when I explain to you how it's put together.
Yep.
For all the listeners out there, let me explain how it's put together. All right, so where did I put that information? I think it was here. Method. Here we go. Okay, so hugelkatoa expert Sepp Holzer recommends cutting out sod. Sod, I had to Google that. It's like...
turf?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Grass. So you dig a rectangle, a hole in your back lawn.
Yeah.
Okay, away you go. Go do it.
Yeah.
Don't tell your landlord. Digging a... I am a landlord.
Oh, wow.
And I wouldn't even tell the husband. He'd be like, I'll just do it because I know. If I said, I'm going to go and dig a hole in the lawn, he'd be like,
no.
Yeah, no, best not to say anything.
Don't
just
tell
do it.
Dad or mum.
Just do it.
Just do it.
So cut out, yeah, whatever size you want. Dig it. And they suggest, SEP suggests a 1 foot deep. So
a spade
make sure you do your back stretches.
Oh, okay. So it needs to be a little...
And let's just hope your neighbours aren't thinking that you're
burying
digging
a grave.
Yeah.
It's suspicious. Oh, but you are going to bury
Don't
them.
Don't worry, neighbour. It's just a hoogle culture.
It's just the logs have died on the tree. We're just having a tree burial.
I know, they must be. And then fill the trench with logs and branches, preferably cut to size.
But, yeah.
Okay. And, yeah, so you can have, like, big fat logs and...
So your old Christmas tree could become a hoogle.
I think pine is one of the barks or the woods that you...
Is there an ideal?
Oh, pine was in the middle because of all the tannins.
Oh,
released. Yeah,
okay.
So it should be fine.
Mm.
There's worse, and I'm going to mention them if we've got time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it will slow the decomposition a bit with those
I see. So
toxins
you want something that's sort of
but, yeah,
going around.
I'm being fussy. Chuck your Christmas tree and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hardwoods are the best. Because they take longer and you want something to not break down too quickly.
Yeah.
So, for instance, if you put wood chips in there, they break down really quickly because they've all been cut up.
They've all been chipped.
Yeah, and they're soft. But, yeah, hardwoods like elders, apple, aspen, birch, cottonwood, maple, oak, poplar, willow, but make sure the willow is well dead, otherwise it will sprout. But hey, I wouldn't mind a beautiful willow tree in my lawn.
What
can
about
you imagine?
Cut up privet.
Come sit under my beautiful huge willow in the middle of the lawn.
Mm.
But yeah.
How about cut up privet? I mean, you want to get rid of that, don't you?
Yeah, that's a hardwood. Really good for burning, so yeah, I guess.
Okay, because, yeah, how many people have lots of trees that they want to cut down to build a hoogle bed in their backyard?
If you live on, I've always got, like, wood, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're into pruning and stuff.
Oh, I suppose the prunings could, so you don't need, like, a whole
massive tree. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm just looking
the
at the picture of the one, like, they don't look like huge, thick branches, so just whatever you've got.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
As long as it's not, I should probably mention this, as long as it's not cedars, camphor, eucalyptus, Siberian elm, and the blacks, black walnut, black cherry, black locust, because
they can
inhibit yeah, they've growth. Got, like, and yeah. they've got, there's a word for it, I think,
allopathic.
Yes, that's the one.
So nothing's going to grow there if you chuck those in.
Yeah, okay. Not so good.
Hmm.
Then you cover the logs, you've got them in there, with upside down the turf that you cut.
Yep.
So upside down.
Yeah.
Again, because the muddy or the swirly bit is more degraded than the grass, so you're working your way out. And then finally, on top of the turf, add grass clipping, seaweed, compost, aged manure, straw, green leaves, mulch, all that.
It kind of sounds like lasagna gardening.
It's very, very similar.
With the added wood.
Yeah.
Underneath?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's that. Now,
anything more?
Wanted to talk about, of course, we've got time, the science.
So how does it work?
Even though I suck at science, I think it's really interesting.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. I was, okay, average. But now I can't remember, Jack. I have to, like, I can't believe when I look at my science books, all that stuff I used to write out, all those equations and stuff. I'd be like, what?
What is this language?
What does this mean? The first year of breakdown means the wood, and along with it fungi, steal a lot of the nitrogen out of the surrounding environment.
Mm.
I didn't get into the ins and outs of that, but they do.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the opposite of photosynthesis in that sense. Yeah. Like, oh, is it? No, photosynthesis. No, it's not right. Okay, discount that one. But yeah, there's a process, and I'll get into it. The nitrogen is not really robbed from the soil. It is just temporarily tied up in the bodies of the soil bacteria.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
Okay, this was the science I was thinking of, but I don't have an equation. With the soil bacteria, that's protein. Because their bodies are made of amino acids.
Yes.
That's how they have life.
Yeah.
So I think, I can't remember all the, I know that nitrogen, carbon, oxygen, is there any other ones in there that make up your amino acids? There's some key, but nitrogen is a major.
Okay.
So in the protein. So that's why it's grabbing it from all around. These bacteria need nitrogen to survive and do the composition work on the low in nitrogen wood, which is mostly carbon. So it is recommended at this stage to add nitrogen during the first year or plant crops such as legumes that add nitrogen to the soil.
Yeah, I would just avoid crops that need lots of nitrogen at that stage and do the nitrogen fixing ones in the first year of planting my bed, I suppose.
Planting, that's exactly what I was going to say. You read my mind. Planting species with minimal nitrogen requirements is necessary. That's what it said. Unless there is plenty of organic material on top of the wood.
Okay.
But
makes sense.
Yeah. So once the wood absorbs nitrogen to its full, the wood will start to break down and then start to give that nitrogen back.
It just
goes through a withholding. It's kind of like banks.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you put money in and it withholds it for what is it, how many days? Feels like a long time.
Yeah.
In the end, you'll be left with a beautiful bed of nutrient-rich soil.
Wonderful.
So that is a bit of the science there.
The bed is a hill shape. It's not a flat bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so with it being hill shaped, so the sun, the plants have an advantage being in the middle or on the side or what?
Yeah, I didn't really get into what to plant on the sides of it. I guess you don't, I wonder if you could, is it steeper?
Because it's like you would plant it kind of.
They make it look so easy in the pictures.
Fashion.
Where's that picture?
So the plants that need shade are in the shady bit down the bottom, and the plants that need sun. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so maybe, it looks like they've got a pumpkin or something on the side that's kind of crawling all over it. And then on the top of it, your sun-loving ones like capsicums, tomatoes could go on the top. Peas, beans.
Yeah.
Those ones.
And so gravity would also do its work with the rain. It would be a bit drier.
Well, this is
down the bottom.
One of the. I've got. The logs. Well, okay. Rainwater is stored and the logs and branches act like a sponge, especially over time.
Yes.
So if you do have a heavy rain,
it won't drain away, leach out all the goodies. Is that basically how it works?
I suppose if it's really heavy, then everything gets a bit leached. But we're talking serious flooding, but maybe you could stand on top of your mound and wave your arms for help. Actually, you never need to water your hugel bed again after the first year, which I thought was interesting, unless you're experiencing long-term drought.
That's cool, because watering isn't my
favourite
job.
I hate watering. It's so annoying. Well, actually, it's really nice some days, but then other days it's just a job. Yeah, especially when there's no rain, it's like, ugh.
I wonder if the Māori people had this kind of hugelkotū in their culture, like when they did the Pars and they had their Kumara mounds, or, you know,
maybe
that had a similar.
I don't think it's an
philosophy
behind
it.
Common, what's the word? Idea.
And
it's not. It's
and the Chinese had pretty, like, terraced gardens for their rice paddies.
Yeah. So you start with your things that take longest on the bottom.
Yeah. Compost pit.
Seems like a pretty obvious idea, but I've never done it.
Yeah, when I think about hugelkatu, I think what we do now with our raised beds at the community garden is sort of like inside out.
Because
we're putting wood on the outside to hold the soil in, but this way you're putting.
And the other advantage is, this method, it sequesters the carbon into the soil more, which is awesome.
And then you don't have to keep watering, which is great.
The composting wood, here's another advantage, also generates heat, which should extend the growing season as well.
Oh, yes. So, obviously, if it's in a mound, it's not going to be frost-pocketed and, it'll get more sun and the heat will stay in it.
It's all just like a...
Yeah.
It's basically just a really good functioning compost heap.
Yeah, good raised bed, but
Who knows, permanent. You might even find Peter Rabbit lurking around the corner.
We have to try it, Karen.
I know. I'm suggesting it. We're going to have a part two on this, guys. Okay. We're going to let you know.
Yeah.
And before we finish,
yes.
Did you have anything more to add? I don't want to miss out on your bowl. Did I give it away?
Of all the saddest words that I have ever heard, the saddest is a story told me by a bird. You'd spend about an hour chatting with a flower, and here's the tale the flower told. Quote, I'm a lonely little petunia and an onion patch.
An onion patch.
Yes,
well, Karen,
I don't know, did I? Tell us now. You can tell us. You can't delay the inevitable, Selena.
It's going to be a surprise when you plant these now, and they'll come up in spring. So what do you reckon it is, Karen?
B for ballistic bulbs. Yes.
Spring bulbs. So, yes, you secretly plant them in the autumn and wait, and then, spring you'll have a beautiful, wonderful floral display
of
all different
ballistic
kinds.
Spring bulb flowers.
Yes. And okay.
There are some beauties too.
So if you go into the garden centre at the moment, you've probably seen them since they come out in January.
And
you
start
buying them. The really keen gardeners just get them really early and buy up all the most coveted ones.
Yeah. Well, that's good though, because then you're prepared. Yeah, preparation is key.
Yeah.
Because how many times, I don't know, you're probably more organised than me, but I've got, I've got to get the bulbs and it's too late.
And you only get the stragglers.
And it's too late, I know.
So
then spring comes and I wonder, what happened?
So you got to get them in now. Buy them now. Go after you finish listening to this show. You go and get some.
That's
if they haven't sold out, and get them in the ground. And so there's lots of different kinds, and it just depends on your preference. But I have a few favourites.
Yeah.
Do you have some, Karen, that you love?
Oh, I always love the daffodil. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Daffodils.
And what was that one that we planted for the freesia bulbs?
Yes,
nice.
Yes, freesias.
What ones are you going to plant this year?
Well, I have snagged some hyacinths.
Okay.
And I actually am going to plant them indoors this time.
Oh, right.
Over water. So I've got like a vase and filled it up with like glass pebbles and just set the bulbs on top. I haven't put the water right up to the bulbs because they need like a little gap so that the roots can go down and the bulbs won't rot.
Mm-hmm.
And then just stick them inside, and over, the season they'll start to grow, and then by spring you'll have beautiful blooms, or fingers crossed because I haven't tried this before, but they make a wonderful indoor vase plant. So that's hyacinth, and they're beautiful.
I'm just looking at
big
the
flowers
now.
They're scented,
a small genus of bulbous spring blooming perennials.
Yeah,
fragrant. They're kind of like a cluster of flowers.
Yeah. So they're like little bottle brushes, but bulbs, and they come in wonderful colours.
Oh, do they?
So I've got purple, but they also come in like pink, yellow, red, orange, whatever.
Purple seems to be the, that's the one that the picture that came up.
I love purple flowers, and I've also got Dutch iris, which is a really easy to grow. You just stick them in the ground and wait, and then they'll come up in spring. Very easy
care.
They're quite long stemmed, so they're very good cut flowers.
Yeah.
And they have beautiful purple with yellow little flecks in them.
Oh, yes.
Or you can get white ones with yellow flecks, but I like the purple ones. So that's what I've
And they like to be in a place where it's sunny?
Yeah, yeah.
So when spring finally comes, it's like, boom.
And the daffodils, lovely scent. And they love to be planted under deciduous trees. So before the trees get their leaves, you have this wonderful display of beautiful yellow flowers.
It's beautiful. It's like, it's just a lovely thing. I just makes me want to just move back to the countryside.
Yeah.
You see those, all the, like autumn, there's leaves everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And then winter, it's sort of mud.
Yeah.
And then spring, you just colour.
Okay. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Some tips about bulbs is some of the, usually spring bulbs are more suited to a proper chilling in the winter, and that helps them, it just gives them the impetus to...
It gives them the nudge to break on through.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need to hit a certain temperature, if I recall.
Yeah.
So with your hyacinths inside... what are you going to do?
Well, I won't keep it in a too warm place to start with. And then when it starts blooming or flowering, you know, put it in the sunnier spot. I can move it around.
Oh, so does it need to be like, what do they call it?
Chilled?
Like super chilled or frost blasted or whatever they call it.
They advise for... flowers like tulips and, hyacinth you can also do, is to keep the bulbs in the fridge for a few months before you plant them.
Okay.
But I'm not quite sure why garden centres don't just sell them, like have a fridge and keep them chilled in the shop.
Probably be a good way to store them. They're not going to sprout because they will still need that warmth before they actually sprout. It's just trigger.
Good
call.
I don't know why they don't do that, because they keep them on the stands and they're not in the fridge or anything.
Those stands get really hot, like it's hot in minor 10 at this time of year.
So if you do buy them, you put them in the fridge.
Okay.
Apparently, I actually don't really do that because
I've never done
there's
it,
food in my fridge. But
Our fridge is so full.
They're not edible.
What about freezer?
I don't know about the freezer.
Mm.
You could try, I guess, but I don't know if that would make too much of a difference.
I always do a little experiment.
But they're used to snow and stuff, especially tulips. So that's why tulips don't do so well in Auckland climate, because they're more of a cool climate. That's why you need to do it.
That's why my tulips didn't do too well.
Mm.
Nothing to do with my inadequacy and getting them in too late.
Yeah.
I think a couple came up. They were so cute.
So one more tip is if you can't get them in the ground, a good place to plant bulbs is in pots, and then you can move them around, and when they start to die off, you can just hide them away so that, you know, you're not like have all their dead leaves like messing up your garden if you're a tidy person. need the dead leaves when they die down to store their nutrients for next time when you plant them out again.
Yeah.
So that's why if you want to have a great display, try pots.
Mm.
And you don't need to plant them in...
My friend Sally always used to say tie up the loose ends best of both worlds.
Okay, I think that's all we
have
time for. So, get them in the ground and you'll have a wonderful surprise.
All right, and we'll let you know how our hygge culture gets on. Just anyone got a tree? Okay, email us.
Yeah, let's do it.
Bye.
Happy gardening, everyone.